Welcome to Modern Sign Books. If you're interested in what makes your favorite authors tick, then you'll love hearing what they have to say in our interviews. Learn how they got started writing, the books and authors that inspired them, and much more. Meet today's hottest authors as they discuss their lives and writing with art book specialist, Roger Nichols. And don't forget to pick up a copy of your favorite books at bjbooks.com. Here's Roger.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio. Mark Greaney is a writer's writer, not because he has a style that calls attention to itself a literary pretension. No, just the opposite. His prose has a clean transparency that puts you, the reader, seamlessly into the action. That does not go unnoticed by the reading public, nor does it go unnoticed by other authors. It's the reason Tom Clancy picked Mark Greaney to collaborate with him on the Jack Ryan series, and why he was offered the series after Tom's passing. It's because Clancy, like millions of other readers, has become a fan of the gray man, Court Gentry. His on-again, off-again relationship with the CIA has led him to a lot of interesting situations. And now, the latest in the series has a perfect title. I love the title, Gunmetal Gray. It hits bookstores February 21st. It also has a page-turning plot that involves a Chinese government hacker who flees China when his parents, hostages for his good behavior, are killed, and he knows he's next. The Chinese want to kill him, but both the Russians and the Americans would like to grab him for the knowledge in his head, and more than one criminal gang wants to exploit his hacking skills. It's up to the gray man to get him to safety. If not, an old friend held hostage will be killed. We are very delighted to welcome back Mark Greaney. Good morning.
Hey, good morning, Roger. Thanks for having me.
You betcha. Now, the right name can go a long way to creating a character's identity. Court Gentry has this kind of upper-class feel, but interestingly enough, the gray man seems to echo a dramatic pulp fiction days, you think, or film noir, things like The Third Man or The Thin Man. Is this intentional, or did it just kind of evolve that way?
Funny you say that. When I wrote the first book in the series, The Gray Man, at the time I was really binging on a lot of older Jean Le Carré novels, and it wasn't researching for The Gray Man or anything. I was just loving it. And I had watched the, I don't know if you ever saw the BBC series of The Spy Who Came In From, I mean, Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy.
Fascinating. Oh my gosh.
Sir Alec Guinness going back to, I think it was around 1980 or so. And so I'd read the novels and I'd watched this really low but tense, BBC series. And all that was just going on at the same time as I wrote The Gray Man, so it wasn't intentional, but I very much see that. You have this really fast-paced, action-y plot in the first, the first book of the series, but at the same time, it kind of harkens back to a little more, let's say, upper crust type of espionage writing. So that wasn't intentional, but it was kind of a lucky, happy coincidence. And then I've kept that in the series a little bit. It kind of gives it a little bit of a weightier feel because you have so much edgy stuff and so much dark stuff. And I kind of like the fact of combining the two.
Well, and it gives an interesting tension between that, those two aspects of it. So I really appreciate that. One of the things that really good heroes have is, everything is not sunny and bright for them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that was important from the beginning of the series is, I want there to be tension on every page, and I want the reader to really feel what this hero is feeling, which is a lot of daggers out for him, not just from the obvious black hats in the story, but from people that he teams up with or past relationships he's had, all sorts of things. There's there's just a lot of tension in the guy's life, and if you can overdo it and just make it this sort of masochistic, miserable story, and I don't want to do that. So there's lightness and there's dark in the story, but I do like, as I said, tension on every page, and even the villains don't all come together and high five and work together perfectly to take care of the hero. It's there's a lot of tension with all the different bureaucracies and all the different cabals that are up against the gray man. I just like it. I hate tension in my real life, but I love it in my writing.
What's interesting, because one of the questions or comments I had as I read this thing, I wrote down inter-service rivalry, not just in the U.S., but in Russia and Chinese as well. And the tension between the various agents there and various services working or not cooperating with each other. I thought that's a really interesting aspect of it. And of course, you are doing this very much consciously.
Yeah, that is conscious, and I do think it lends realism to it, and it also, the average reader probably isn't working for the Russian FSB, but the average reader probably works in a big company where people are vying for power and authority, and there's the guy up the hall that rules with an iron fist, or is a big fish in a little pond, and I think that's very relatable. I worked in the corporate world, and I love the company I work for. I'm not saying that there was that level of backstabbing, but it's just kind of fun to translate that into a bigger, into a bigger story that, life and death issues going on within these sort of interagency rivalries.
Well, anytime there are more than three people, you've got politics involved. So, in fact, more
very
than two,
true.
Actually.
Yeah.
So, I was, as I went through, I happened to jot down some what I thought were character revealing moments, and I'm interested to see if those are the same things that you were thinking of as you wrote. I'm sure you were, but almost at the very end, one of the things he says, everybody I've ever met was hiding something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's just the person I've created in the series. He works for a deniable department in a shady or shadowy, let's say, organization, and he comes from a history of, a lot of deceit and a lot of darkness. He's always, if he's having any sort of an interaction with someone, it's usually involved some sort of a lie, either his legend or his identity or his mission. They say cover for action and then cover for status. Both of those are things that an operative will do in the field, which involves deception. So he's deceiving people. He's expecting other people are deceiving him, and that's just the life in which he lives. So the reader is locked into this guy for better or worse, and you're along for the ride in that. And you have to sort of doubt or be suspicious of everyone you come in contact with in this story.
Yeah, it's a matter of self-preservation, a certain amount, I would say.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And then at the kind of a beginning of the book, or very close to the beginning, it says, being the gray man didn't mean being in control at all times. Sometimes it meant relinquishing all control, playing the game. And that is an interesting insight.
Yeah, it's so easy to make these characters like they're some sort of a superhero, and they do, either with their fists or their wits, they just go through and push things aside and enact their will throughout the whole story. And I think that makes for kind of a boring story where you sort of feel the superhuman nature of the character. In the real world, he's been in this is the sixth book in the series, and I can't tell you how many times he's had his head tied behind his back or a hood over his head, or he somehow had to put himself unarmed in a dangerous situation because that's the only way he could get into the situation. The cover for action. And I think that just lends a reality to the situation. He's not Iron Man coming through, completely mm-hmm. able to defend himself at all times. I want to create a slightly more realistic world.
Yeah. There is a noble streak in him, too, that shows up from time to time. He has maybe a little different than most people, but he has a very strong sense of ethics.
Yes, and he has a conscience that gets him into a lot of trouble throughout.
Yes.
And in this story, and I use that in all the books to some degree. I mean, at some point, he evaluates the mission that he's on and determines how right or how wrong he is throughout, what's going on. And in this story, he has a pretty cut and dried mission that the CIA sends him on. But as he learns more and more about it, not just that he's being duped by the CIA, which he sort of is to some degree. It's a little shady, and I don't want to give too much away. But he does feel like his target, his mission doesn't necessarily serve his target in the way that he thinks would best work. And I thought it would be interesting as I was writing the story that it's okay with me if some of the readers think he's doing the wrong thing. They think, well, it would just be better if he did X, Y, or Z instead of mm-hmm. A, B, and C, which is what he wants to do. And I wonder when the book comes out if I'll get some pushback. I'll get some fan mail that says, you know, I liked the book and it was fun, it was exciting, but I don't know why the gray man did this and he could have just done this. Sort of ignoring the moral code that I've created for this guy over the past six books. But I think this is what the character would do in that situation. And if some of the fans think that he should have done something else, I'm okay with that because I think that just makes for interesting reading.
It does. There's one point, to give away too much, where there are a heavy duty firefight and he risks himself to save several women in the situation. And that goes a long way to indicate moral character.
Right. Yeah. He's in this situation and every fiber of his being wants to continue on with his mission and get out of there, but he just can't turn away from the plight of these people he realizes will be left in harm's way. And I've had him do that before. It's like he'll do the right thing. He might go kicking and screaming into it, and he might be very sarcastic and complaining about it the whole way. But, you know, he definitely is a guy that knows right from wrong, and although his compass doesn't point true north, there are these moments where it's very, on the surface what he needs to do, regardless of whether that puts him in jeopardy.
And interestingly enough, that leads into the quote from his old friend Fitzroy, and who says to him at one point, he says, "With you, it's all about doing the right thing, come what may. You'll do it with an ally, you'll do it with an enemy, or you'll do it alone. You'll die before you go against what you believe in. It makes you the one good man in all this." And then he answers, he says, "It makes me exploitable and expendable." And the other guy says, "Too true. No argument there, lad." That's a nice little exchange.
Yeah, and that's sort of the series. I should use that as as sort of an explanation of the series at large, because something along those lines comes up in each one of these novels. Because it's just the character that I created 6 or 7 years ago when I wrote the first book has stayed true to that, and the stories have revolved around him having a plan A and maybe deciding on a plan B, and then turns out plan C is the only thing that's going to work for anybody. So I like twists and turns in novels personally. I'm a reader first and foremost, and this is what I like to read. So I want to put enough intrigue in there to where it doesn't become a convoluted story, because these are fun action novels at their core, and just build as much other sort of nuance and texture into the story as I think will fit.
Mm-hmm. You know, one of the delights of a series character is that each time they appear, the reader gets a little bit more information about them. How do you think Court Gentry has changed over the series?
That's a good question. I think he was very sure of himself in book one. He felt like he'd been wronged, and he was somebody that he wasn't actually working on trying to clear his name, but he was definitely working on trying to, you know, make it through the day, very sure of himself. He's less sure of himself now because of some textural things that have happened in the story, some history that's come out. And so now he's someone that sees himself definitely as a weapon that can be put to good use for doing the right thing. But I think he's a little bit more fatalistic. He's a little bit more aware that he might not have all the answers. He second guesses himself a little bit. There is a time where he flips the switch and does what he has to do. But, just like in the real world, his character and his, moral compass or whatever is this maturing aspect of him. And so he's a fun character to write, as long as I make each story very different from the last, which I've been able to do so far. And that makes it fun for me. I feel like he's always going to be growing as a character.
And again, that's the way we as readers enjoy it. I mean, there are series characters who never change at all. And you have the plot is a formula, and they read it over and over again because they love the formula. But I think it's much more interesting to have something where you get a familiar character and put them in really different situations and give them different responses. And that you, as I say, you learn more about that, about the character as a result of those situations. So keep up.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that. It's two sides of the same coin, though, because there are some books that I read and I know exactly what I'm going to get when I pick it up. But I still I still pick it up, you know, and I'm still like, that's the book that I'm looking forward to. And there's not a lot of change in the character or whatever, but it's all in the execution of how the author does it. So it's two sides of the same coin. For me personally, I like this. I like each book to definitely be a standalone novel. But at the same time, that have this larger story arc, which is a treat for the readers that have stuck with you the whole time, or the readers that want to go back with, you know, they might read Gunmetal Grey book 6 and say, wow, I need to know what's gotten him to this point. And each one of the novels is a standalone, but you build a little bit on each story to where it should be a pretty fulfilling experience to take in the whole series. So that's just how I like to write.
Yeah. And I was just curious about the way you plan out when you, you know, look ahead, because obviously with as many obligations as you have got to be really focused and planned. Say, okay, how often do I want to stop and doing the Jack Ryan stuff and stop and do a Gray Man stuff? Does that long range planned out for the next 3 or 4 years, or you just kind of go as you go?
A little bit go as I go. You know, with the publisher, I've got a deal for 2 Gray Man books after Gunmetal Grey so far, and the books are doing really great. So you know, I'm in a lucky position where I expect things will, you know, I'll be offered more after that, and I'm happy to write them. You know, the only thing is I want to sort of have some control over my deadlines, you know, so that I know that I'll have a good book out. If you just have to have a book turned in every January 1st or something, I think after a while the quality would suffer, and I don't want that to ever happen. So I want to, you know, have the time I need to work on the stories and develop the stories. It's not like painting a fence or something. It's so many times people read your book and they'll be like, you need to write faster. You know, I can't believe I have to wait X amount of time for the next book. And it's not just, you know, a certain number of hours it takes to create a book. That works for some people, and it worked for me for a while, but you know, you pick your low hanging fruit earlier on in your career, and you have to do a lot more work and do a lot more research and talk to more people and let ideas germinate. And so, you know, I've always said that, you know, I may do a Gray Man book that people don't like, but it's never going to be from lack of trying. It'll be maybe I'm swinging for the fences and hit a foul ball somewhere down the road. But, you know, I'm put my all into each of these books, and that will always continue.
But it's just interesting is how often do people bring you ideas or situations that they'd love to see them in?
I get ideas a lot. I don't read things. I just, you know, I've had people that are like, could you read, you know, here's an idea I have. And I don't even like open the attachment because I don't want to be accused of, you know, using somebody's idea. Early on, you know, somebody sent me something on Facebook, which sounded exactly like a book that I was ghostwriting at the time. And I thought, wow, if that person knew that I was ghostwriting this book, they would totally think I stole their idea. It wasn't the whole plot. It was just an aspect of one of the characters. And it kind of made me take a step back and say, you know, it's great that people have ideas, and I hope people write their own books because some of these ideas are pretty good, but I don't want to touch them. I have enough ideas right now. If I didn't think of anything else new, I'd be writing books for 15 years. It's just you have to develop those ideas, and you have to go out yourself and get and do the research and talk to the right people or whatever. It does sometimes to me feel like a lot of people think that authors are just sitting at home checking their email to see if anybody's got an idea for them to write a book about, because I get something every couple of days about you should do this or you should do that, or you should talk to, you know, my uncle who, you know, was a tail gunner and, you know, in the Vietnam War or something like that. And it's like, you need to write a book about him. And it's, perhaps there are authors that don't have their own creative ideas that are just sitting back waiting to get those emails. But I just have a lot going on as is that I'm passionate about.
And of course there are the ones that say, you know, I've got this great idea, we'll split it, you write the book, I'll put the idea up, and we'll split the profits. And I've heard that way too many times out there.
Oh, have you? Yeah, same thing. And it's like, you know, I'm not a writer, but I've got this great idea. And you know, I hate to sound like this, but I mean, it's just like, I bet you everybody, there's 400 million people in America, and I bet you every one of us has a great idea. It just takes a lot of discipline and refining it. And your elevator pitch, it does not translate, you know, it's not just something you hand over to an author and then they write a bestseller about it. I just don't think it works that way that often.
not very much. But I want to point out one little item that has popped up at me. We were reading through this, and at one point, he tapes night vision binoculars to the bill of his ball cap to give him hands free. And I just like, oh, that's a great idea. Is that something you picked up from one of your contacts in the community, or just an idea that came to you?
Not specifically. I was doing research on the goggles and then just thinking about the mechanics of where he was in the story and what he might do. And I have him using ERSAT's methods all the time to make the most of what he has. He's not always parachuted in behind the lines with the latest and greatest CIA gadgetry. And right. The Gray Man as a character he's a denied CIA contract agent at this point in his career. So they don't give him CIA equipment. They give him off the shelf material here and there, which means, you know, they'll buy some surveillance gear that you can buy off the shelf from a company in Japan or Korea or something. And he'll use that because it can't be traced back to the CIA. Also, early on in this story, he feels like maybe his cover's been blown with the CIA. So he takes a lot of the gadgetry that they gave him and he dumps it in a garbage can. Fortunately for him, he's in Hong Kong, which if you've ever been to Hong Kong, there's a high-tech electronics shop about every 15 feet, you know, like we have, you know, Burger King's in America. Yeah. And so he does do some shopping in this story. So, yeah, no, it was just something he put together because of the mechanics of what he was doing, which means me as the author put it together because of not wanting to have him fool with his hands so much as I was writing the story. It just seemed like a convenient thing to do.
It seems to me that, you know, every spy or agent or needs to carry a roll of duct tape, whatever they're doing. It just seems like.
Yeah, they say that in the military. If the answer to your problem is in duct tape, you're not asking the right question.
But there's another quote you have in here from the military. It's a quote from the SEALs. It says the only easy day was yesterday, and I like that too. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, that's a real thing the SEALs say for sure.
Yeah, when you mentioned in that his father was a Marine Scout sniper, are you looking at that being some of the influence on him as a character?
Yes, I had created early on in the series that his father was a police officer in Florida who had a background in the Marines, and he'd started a firearms school, and that's where Court grew up, basically as almost a mascot for the school of SWAT guys coming in from all over the country, and finally CIA as the school got bigger and bigger, and so that's where he learned a lot of his chops just as a boy. And so his dad has always had this influence on him, not completely positive. And you see that play out in different parts of the series, just as any legitimate, you know, the father has a huge role over the son. And that's just a reality. And you spend a lot of time in the Gray Man's head in these novels. Obviously, I've written six now, and I guess they're, you know, 2,500 pages or something of Gray Man story. So there's a whole lot of time where, you know, the effect of his father or the effect of his past has an effect on him. And so also he's in Vietnam at the time. And I had said that his dad had been in Vietnam. So I wanted to explore that a little bit, just in a very small way, just him thinking about his father and what his father might have experienced while he was over there.
Right. It adds a lot of depth to it, I think. And again, it's one of those small things that build character like that I really enjoyed about the book, which is highly recommended, by the way. This is good stuff. And I will say it to you directly. Dang God, good stuff. So there you go. Is there anything about the book that I haven't asked you would like to share with the listeners?
No, I don't, not that I know of. I mean, I think that when you pick this book up, you do get, a lot of people come to me having read my Tom Clancy novels. You do get a geopolitical flavor that you get in a Tom Clancy novel in that, it is a very contemporary look on what's going on in the world. The Chinese, People's Liberation Army, cyber warfare, the criminal organizations in Vietnam and Cambodia and Thailand. So it is a very, you know, it is the world as we see it now. And then it departs from the Tom Clancy series in that it's edgier, it's a little grittier, and you spend a lot of time at the street level. Whereas with the Tom Clancy book, you inevitably spend a good bit of time in the Oval Office or in the Kremlin mm-hmm. or whatever. And this mm-hmm. book basically is about a denied CIA officer, contract agent on a mission with, more enemies than friends by a factor of about 100. And how he navigates through that. So a lot of people think that it's a Tom Clancy novel because I'm the guy that wrote Tom Clancy novels. And when they see it, when they read it, they'll actually see that this is an edgier version of a geopolitical story. And so I hope they like that distinction and difference.
Well, I think that there'll be no problem with that. I know that the advanced work has get a lot of positive reviews, and I think it's going to continue on like that. Mark, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with us, and I want to mention that if you are listening out there to this broadcast and you are a fan of Mark's, you can pick up an autographed copy at VJ Books because they do a fabulous job.
They sure do, and I appreciate you having me on. Thanks.
Thank you so much. Our guest has been Mark Greeny. The latest in his Gray Man series is Gunmetal Gray. It publishes February 21st. Thank you so much, and keep up the good work.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to Modern Sign Books. Make sure to follow and comment on who you would like to hear next. Feel free to check out our other author interviews. And visit vjbooks.com to pick up signed copies of all of your favorite books.